Lunch with Pippa Hudson on Cape Talk.
Join the conversation.
It is my very great pleasure this afternoon to welcome to the studio two acclaimed and award-winning international photographers whose body of work has been devoted to documenting vanishing cultures in some of the most remote parts of the world. Carol Beckwith and Angela Fisher were born in America and Australia, respectively, but most of their life's work has been devoted to our continent of Africa. And they are with us in town to promote their first solo show on this continent, entitled African Twilight, Vanishing Rituals and Ceremonies. It's currently on exhibition at the THK Gallery in Waterkant Street. And this exhibition is actually a companion piece to their new book, African Twilight, The Vanishing Cultures and Ceremonies of the African Continent. It is a massive double-volume publication, 750 colour photographs covering this continent's wonderful cultural diversity and the rituals which span our lives here, from birth to death to courtship to marriage to leadership to religion to healing. It is a real labor of love that they've produced, and I'm so excited to welcome them to the studio to talk to us about it. Thank you so much for making time in a very busy schedule to join us, and welcome to Cape Talk.
Thank you for having us.
Can you, just as a matter of interest, tell us a little bit about each of your own individual backgrounds and how you became interested in photography?
I'm Australian. My name is Angela, and I was working with the Aborigines in Northern Territory of Australia. And I'd studied sociology, and I was lucky enough one night to see a documentary of the Maasai of the Serengeti. And I realized that I had to go to Africa. Within 2 weeks, I'd left Australia. I was age 21. I flew to Johannesburg and then moved directly into the Maasai Plains.
Wow.
And I realized that that was my calling. I was really in love with the people. I was in love with the fact that they were so beautifully decorated and such proud of their traditions. And also that the country was extraordinary. The flat savanna plains with acacia trees and blue-topped hills. Mm. I mean, it was just a perfect place.
So that is how Angela came to Africa. Carol, what about you?
I come from the United States. I went to art school in Boston and won a traveling fellowship to develop my abilities in painting, photography, and art history abroad. I lived in a Zen temple in Japan, went through New Guinea, and ended up in Africa. And really, I felt like I'd come home. I was living with traditional cultures. I was looking at art forms that were created to ensure survival or to protect from drought or promote fertility, or dance, music, all of the different art forms that I felt were not about decorating a wall or performing on a stage, but rather really integrated into daily lifestyle and the bigger element of survival. Africa took my heart. I've been there 40 years, and Angela and I actually met in Africa. And it's quite a wonderful story. I'd love to hear it,
Angela. That was going to be my next question, is what brought the two of you together?
Well, we were very lucky. Carol was making a book on Maasai on the border of Tanzania and Kenya. And her father, who was a very creative man, decided to give her a birthday present. He flew from Boston to Maasai land and found a balloon flight that could take Carol all over Maasai land to do aerial shots, which would complete her book. The lucky thing is that the balloon pilot turned out to be my brother, Simon. And both Simon and Carol were young, very dynamic, attractive, and energetic. And at 1,000 feet high in the balloon, Simon looked very closely into Carol's eyes and said, "You know, I'd really like to tell you something."
My heart was beating wildly.
And then, still looking very closely in his eye, in her eyes, he said, "I'd really like you to meet my sister."
My heart was unexpected.
Yes, Carol was saddened, but this isn't the end of the story. When the balloon landed, he wrote me a very effusive letter about Carol. And the letter had to reach West Africa, where I was working on Africa Adorned. And in the letter, he said, "You know, you're both lone travelers and you're both passionate about recording the cultures of Africa. I think you really should meet." All I ask of you is to answer this letter. I want to know where you met Carol and how that meeting did go.
Angela and I met 1 year later in Nairobi. We took one look at each other and we were disappointed.
We'd each
expected an Amazonian bushwoman dressed in khakis and boots. However, Simon was persuasive. We met the next day and realized that we really were kindred spirits, favoring a nomadic lifestyle and passionate about the traditional cultures of Africa. And within a week, we were photographing side by side at a Maasai warrior ceremony in Tanzania. During that week, we shared a dream. We both envisioned that one day we would create a creative, comprehensive visual record of the most powerful ceremonies that move African people through life from birth to death. We were aware even then that these ceremonies were beginning to disappear, and we felt an urgency to record them. Mm. And today, 40% of what we've recorded no longer exists,
wow,
except in the pages of our books.
I mean, that's a depressing figure. Can you speak to us about some of the factors that have led to that disappearance? Is it because the traditional cultures in which those ceremonies were so important have been dispersed by urbanization and by encroachment of land? What has happened that they've just vanished like that?
Yes, you're right. What has happened in Africa is that the Western world has encroached on traditional cultures, and also the politics of very many countries have been such that instead of valuing traditions, sometimes when they see the materialism and the glitz of the Western world, it makes them feel rather ashamed of their traditional cultures and feeling that they're backward. And there's a variety of things that have really proved to lead to this erasement of traditional cultures, ranging from governments leasing land to outside people like the Chinese and Indonesians to grow crops and have plantations over what would be traditional pastoral land. This has happened particularly in the Omo River area of Ethiopia. And in other areas, it's really just as simple as the iPhone. Mm. A mobile phone can make an incredible impact on a very remote culture, because suddenly, overnight, you have a vision of the outside world. And when you see what the outside world is like at first, you think, wow, this is wonderful, all these things, you know. Mm. And people don't realize that their traditional cultures have incredible ideas and themes and well-thought-out methods of working together that actually have been successful for preserving cultures over thousands and thousands of years. And if you suddenly leave that behind and rush to the city for a glamorous job, you'll probably end up being a night watchman in Nairobi, suffering and feeling lonely and realizing that life isn't what you thought it would be. We feel very strongly that it's important that Africa changes at a pace that it should change at, but we also feel strongly that it's important that people are given a chance to hold on to their cultures as well as move forward in time.
And the two are not necessarily mutually exclusive, that it can be done.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Interesting SMS in from our listener, Jean, who says, I can't help listening to you thinking of the missionary who recently lost his life attempting to engage with a remote community in Asia. Have you ever found yourself in danger due to your work?
I think that one of the most dangerous moments was when we were working with the Sorma people in southwest Ethiopia. In order to get to them, we organized a mule train of 15 animals traveling over 10,000-foot mountains, and we were in an area that was still extremely traditional, where women were wearing lip plates, where men were stick fighting to attract wives. And we spent 6 weeks with the Sorma and grew very, very close to them. We had a lot of friends there, and we were able to photograph all of the major rites of passage through life. And they even built a home for us and asked if we would stay there forever and we wouldn't have to put lip plates in. But when it came time to leave, and now we'd worked with about 100 people, and there were about 16,000 Sorma, we heard a rumor that our mule train was going to be ambushed, that we would not be allowed to leave alive. And we were really concerned about this. We felt we'd been so close to the community, we couldn't figure out at first what had happened. And what had happened was that they have a very egalitarian social system, and we had favored three villages and left 14,000 people out, and this was unacceptable. So our Ethiopian guide, Zoga, felt very responsible for our lives, and he made a plan. He said, let's have a goat roast, and we will invite all of the Sorma chiefs to come and enjoy a thank you from all of us for the 5 weeks that we'd spent. We put all the food we had left into the goat roast. We welcomed them royally and thanked them appreciatively. And at the end of the day, he asked, would they consider escorting us out of Sormaland at 3 a.m. on a dark night? The chief said they would be honored to do so. They came back at 3 a.m. We set up the mule train, packed. Each one of us was on a mule with a chief in between each mule, and we headed out in the darkness. And as the sun came up, we saw the Sorma warriors in the branches of trees with their Kalashnikov and AK-47 rifles pointed at us. But when they saw their chiefs and they saw how honored this procession was, they did not shoot. And we got right to the frontier of Sormaland, completely safe, and we're here to tell the tale.
What a story it is, too.
And we have been back twice since then.
Okay. You've been almost everywhere in Africa. I think the count is, in fact, how many of the countries of Africa have you not visited, I guess, is probably the easier question to answer.
Well, many people don't realize that Africa has 54 countries in it.
Yeah.
And we've worked in 44 of them. We still have remaining 10 countries to do. Often it's not possible to get in for political reasons, or in some cases we've just felt that some countries had stronger ceremonies than others, stronger in the sense of visual, visually able to record. And when it came to 14 years for African Twilight, we decided we needed to call a halt and publish.
Yeah.
However, the good news is that we will go back and do the other 10. And top of the list is Angola. We've tried several times to get into Angola, and we'd like to work with the Chokwe people in the north and with the Mulima people in the south. Two completely different cultures, but that will be the next port of call. And then after that, Mauritania, Tunisia, etc. We are at the moment celebrating African Twilight, and African Twilight is an extraordinary book which contains 34 ceremonies. And this time we've had to go further and deeper into Africa than ever before, because it's been more difficult to find ceremonies intact. Mm. So we've been lucky enough to get right into the Congo on several visits, and we've got right into the border of Lake Turkana, where it meets the delta of the Omo River, where probably some of the most completely unique and old traditional societies live, who still paint their bodies to attract the opposite sex and scarify their bodies to please one another.
Fascinating, fascinating work. You're talking here about some of the most, though, private, sacred moments of human life. I'm interested to know how you approach the request for permission to go and document them. Is it different for every encounter? How do you manage that? Because you are intruding into very, very private spaces in a way.
Well, yes, it is different for every group. But overall, we come into these areas and we adopt African time. We slow down, we sit under an acacia tree with the village chief, and we meet his family, and we get to know each other. We don't take our cameras out till we really feel that there's a trust between us. They know that we're coming with appreciation and fascination and interest in their cultures. Mm. And then very slowly, as we're integrated into the community, we're able to photograph. We try to be as invisible as possible. We try to leave all of our preconceptual baggage behind and come as tabula rasa, as open as possible to what we're going to see in front of us. And we often give Polaroid pictures in the past or show people on our digital cameras what we're recording so that they can see that it's done in a respectful way. Mm. And as we get closer and closer, we realize that we're very lucky to be women, because women are often very protected. Women are given access to the male rituals because the men are welcoming us in and they're used to the interaction with outsiders. But women who are much shyer, when you actually sit with them and you agree to let them redress you and retress your hair and rename you, then suddenly you're part of their community and they feel very close to you and you can share, confidences with them. We found that it was sometimes hard to become a woman and to be able to jump up and record a male ceremony, but realized if we put our trousers and camera jackets back on, we became genderless, and the men accepted us back in again.
Yeah. I'm intrigued. You have been to so many places and interacted with so many different cultures. Is your overwhelming impression one of how alike we all are, or is it one of how very different we are from one another? What do you take away?
I think what's so extraordinary in Africa is that there's 1,300 different cultural groups, and we've worked with probably about 170 of them. We're struck by the variety and the creativity of the African cultures. They all have their own wonderful way of portraying themselves and their own ceremonies. And, one can be a nomad or a pastoralist. One can be a king or a chief. There's so many different types of forms of living. There's so many different rituals that are going on. However, underlying all this, there's a very curious factor, and it came to light particularly one evening while we were working in Somaliland, where the women wear very large lip plates when they're about to be married, and the larger the lip plate, the more cattle your family will have for your hand in marriage. And as we were working with this young Soma woman who was about to be married, she'd seen Carol and I give each other a kiss on the cheek at night, just a friendly little kiss on the cheek, and suddenly she jumped up and she gave us each a kiss on the cheek with this very large lip plate in. And you get this strange moist sensation all over the side of your cheek. And as it happened, I thought, my God, she has had exactly the same emotion as we do. She's feeling exactly the same feelings. And one of the most important things we learned in Africa is that although we look very different, some of us are naked, some of us are dressed, some of us are scarified, some of us are veiled, some lip-plated, and some painted, we're really all the same human beings with the same human emotions and the same human needs. And what we feel very strongly is that we hope that our book brings forth this characteristic about all these extraordinary cultures in Africa, and underlying that how important it is to learn to understand each other's cultures and to celebrate the things that we all share in common and to accept the things that we don't. And we believe very strongly that this is the way that humankind should evolve, and also this is the route to world peace.
What a wonderful note on which to end the show today. I do want to tell listeners that if you would like to engage with the photographic exhibition, you'll find it at THK Gallery, which is at 52 Vatican Street. And tomorrow morning at 11, you'll have the opportunity to participate in a walkabout with Carol and Angela, talking about some of the images, followed by a signing of the beautiful new book, African Twilight, at noon. So lovely to have you with us in studio today. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.